The Praying with the Eyes podcast, episode 32, Safe for the Whole Family, starts now.
In this episode, Rochelle Hecker and I wrestle with our desire to be safe in our relationship with Christ. We'll talk about both selfishness and compliance as they relate to living a safe life. Is God safe?
Welcome to the Praying with the Eyes podcast. Your hosts are Doug Bronner, senior pastor at Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and Rochelle Hecker, mom and public speaker. As an avid photographer, Doug combines the beauty of God's creation with the beauty of His Word in a Praying with the Eyes devotional blog. Today's discussion digs deeper into a topic that was first introduced in one of these blogs. Thanks again for tuning in to today's podcast.
In The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, C.S. Lewis writes, when the children are meeting with the beavers, and they're hearing about Aslan for the first time, Mr. Beaver states, "Safe? Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Of course, Aslan isn't safe. But he's good. He's the king, I tell you." This issue that Rochelle and I are going to take on today is on safety and this idea that God is safe and that life here should be safe for Christians. And we want to talk about that. Rochelle, you and I both like that quote. Why do you like it? And you know more of the setting. Like as we were prepping for this podcast today, I mentioned that I have the book on my Nook, and I can't find the power cord for it, so I couldn't get to the book because it's out of juice. Anyway, maybe set a little bit more the framework for that quote, as well as why you think it's such a great
quote. I will do my best. You're making me laugh just in that you didn't even read it properly.
I didn't. You know, I know because I started off the quote wrong. I would have, I had to put Aslan in there. I know it's not. Of course, he's not safe. I understand that, but go ahead.
Part of the love for it is you've got to understand growing up, reading the Chronicles of Narnia, I did it so much that my brother and sister used to mock me and say that I was living in that world.
Did you always go into a wardrobe or closet and try to find the way to Narnia?
No, I never felt the need to do that. I just kept reading the book and that would take me there.
Okay.
So I didn't play it outside, but I kind of lived like that, just wandering. I was a spacey little girl. I'm still a spacey adult. I just see that side of life. So I enjoyed the whole series. Let's start with that. But the quote itself, and you got to read it. You got Mr. Beaver's, kind of a rough guy. So, safe? Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Of course Aslan isn't safe, but he's good. He's the king, I tell you.
You did a good job. You can tell your drama background.
Yeah, that's how he sounds. thank you. And the whole point of it is that the kids are asking because they just heard that he's a lion and they're picturing the lion they know. So they're saying, is it safe to meet with this lion? And that's when Mr. Beaver is telling them, no, it's not. He isn't safe. That's not the point. We're not going to meet with him because he's safe. We're going to meet with him because he's good and he's our king.
But if he's good, wouldn't he be safe? That's really the question we're dealing with. If God was good, if Christ is good, then wouldn't he be safe? Because that's what we need. We want safety.
It's what we want. It's not what we need.
Okay. There's a big difference. So we're going to take on this issue of safety today, which you probably have already guessed. And I hope that you'll be challenged along with Rochelle and me, because we wrestle with this ourselves. We're not here to say we're the most daring people in the world, and we'll get at that in a second. But the Praying with the Eyes ministry is a part of the ministry of Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, where I am a senior pastor and where Rochelle is a member, and more than just a member. She's a member of our board of directors, part of the leadership team at Holy Cross. You can find out more about Holy Cross by going to our website at holycrosscs.org. If you want to hear sermons by Pastor Jeffrey or myself, you can find those there as well. The Praying with the Eyes ministry has its own website, and yeah, kind of obvious URL for it. It's prayingwiththeeyes.com. And you'll find their daily devotional blogs that Rochelle and I and others write, as well as other blogs. We haven't had as many of the other blogs lately as we would like to. We've been concentrating on the podcast as well as getting more writers for the daily devotional blog. And it looks like my other brother-in-law who lives in Seattle, Don Schatz, is going to join us in the next round in October. And so it's wonderful to see what's happening with those daily devotions. If you're looking for a daily devotion, you can subscribe to those daily devotions and have them sent to your email. When you go to the website, just click on subscribe up in the right-hand corner, and you will receive those daily devotions each day. You can email Rochelle and I at questions@prayingwiththeeyes.com. We'd love to hear from you and to keep this conversation going. And you can also leave comments on at the show notes. If you go to the website and click on the banner for episode 32, you will be taken to the show notes. And at the very, very bottom, it's kind of an obscure place for the comments, but you can make comments there. If it's your first time making a comment, they usually come through me and I have to approve those comments first and then get them up there. But please, please comment. Let's keep the discussion going. Today's blog is based on a blog that I wrote quite a while ago. I had taken a trip down into the Wet Valley between the Wet Mountains and the Sangre de Cristo Mountains one day, and I was being chased by a snowstorm. And I saw a field of bison, and I got out and took pictures of them, and one of them was staring back at me, and it spurred this thought of safety. And you can find that blog, a link to that blog, in the show notes as well. And we'll talk more about that picture and that blog at the end of the podcast for today. So, Rochelle, let's talk for a moment about our level of safety, just in general in life. On a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of risk takers are we? 1 being, you know, we're going to play it safe all the time, or 10, we're going to be somewhat suicidal in our life and take risks. So for me, you know, I know it depends on the situation some. I think I'm not as much of a risk taker as other people say that I am. So I'm going to kind of say that I'm more of a 6 and that's based on what other people tell me. When I look back at things I've done in my life, I have flown an airplane, a little Cessna. I've taken a number of flights with a friend of mine. I've done things like that. I ski, but I don't do blacks very often. I will do them, but I kind of like to keep my skis on the snow and not go airborne. I kind of find myself being pushed to being more of a risk taker and not playing it safe. What about you?
Oh, and like you said, you know, it's that scale thing. I don't like those. But like you said, it does depend on the situation. Even while you were talking, I was thinking it through. It depends on the situation. I think I would be mid-range, except that my sister and I always planned to go on the Amazing Race together and do that. And I would totally do anything they told me to on there.
Really?
Because it's a different situation. It would have a goal. It would have a purpose. Would I go bungee jumping for no reason? No. But if it's to win a prize, sure.
So why don't you? Why don't you apply? Why don't you do a video and send it in and say, hey, we'd like to be a contestant.
We got as far as doing a video together, and then it got... something happened and she wasn't able to send it in. So we have to redo the whole thing.
So you have gone that far. So you're really serious.
Yeah, we were, at least at one point. I don't know if she's still up for it, but I am.
I think that's cool.
But yeah, partly, you know, because it's fun to do things as sisters. And you know what? I take bigger risks with my sister because she's a bigger risk taker. So I'm a little bit of what company I'm in.
You know, I think I was going to say that's true too. I think it depends on who you're with as far as being a risk taker.
Right. Yeah. And then you talked about skiing. I can ski black diamonds, but I don't like to because to me that's not enjoyable. I want to relax.
It's
when
work.
I'm skiing. Yeah.
Moguls are work.
I'm boring as a skier. So, yeah, it just depends on the situation.
Oh, it's why you go skiing. I go skiing, like you say, too. I'm out just enjoying. My favorite run is a Blue Cruiser. You know, one that's got some steepness to it. But it's not moguly, and so I can just cruise and long. Those are fun.
So someday when you're looking rough, I'm going to say, you're looking a little mogul-y today.
Yeah, I do. I look a little rough today. I cut myself shaving. I haven't cut myself shaving for a long time and just nicked up my neck today. I hate that when that happens.
And now everybody has to know.
Okay. I heal fast. They won't see it. So Robert Altman, director Robert Altman said, to play it safe is to not play. I'd kind of like to alter that quote to say, to play it safe is to not engage life. Play is, I think play, that word itself, the word play, life isn't all about play. Okay.
Oh, okay, so that's what's
bothering. That's what bothers me about it. It's not all about having fun, I guess is what I see in that. But I think to play it safe, you just don't engage life.
I argue with everything. I don't know why. It's probably just the wording, but because I know what you mean, and I would agree with what.
Well, argue it, please. Go.
It's just stupid argument. I'm just picturing like my son likes
stupid?
To play things safe. I'm sorry. My argument is stupid.
No. Oh, okay, got it.
No, my son likes to play it safe in a lot of areas, but in one of which is a funny story of when my oldest was first learning to drive, and the first time she drove with her siblings in the car, he put on all his Taekwondo fighting gear and a bike helmet. So he had on all this padding, got in his bike head, but he still got in the car, right? You can picture that.
I can. Knowing Billy, I know that.
So he was taking a risk, but he was doing it in a safer way. So that's why I was
okay. Okay. So you ran into an article about this guy who was skydiving without a parachute.
The guy skydiving without a parachute, who Luke Aikens.
Okay.
Yeah. So I guess it's going to become the new thing, and he's a. I think he's a. What's it called? What's the word for a traditional professional risk taker?
Okay. No, just he's a professional risk taker. Okay.
Stuntman type okay. guy. Yeah. Anyway, so his stunt was to jump 25,000 feet without a parachute. And yeah, that is kind of along the same lines.
Okay. Finish the story to parachute with, and into
a net.
Okay. And you said the article, all the calculations, there's that mixture of taking a risk and yet minimizing the risk, right?
Right. So he was still being safe because he used a lot of science and technology. Not only did he use science and technology, but also now we have the net itself. The different types of things we have now has made it safer to try that, something you wouldn't have tried 20 years ago.
And even in skiing and things where there seems to be inherent risk, there are ways that risk is minimized by the design of the skis, the equipment, the clothing, all of that. I mean, and Billy True. Did the same thing. You know,
yeah.
It's not about being, we're not going to talk today about, when we talk about playing it safe in our relationship with God, we're not talking about absolute reckless abandon with no thought of anything for safety. We're not talking about that. We're talking about a tension that's there between playing it safe and not, and especially in the second segment, Rochelle brings up a good point that I won't mention right now, but that's really the heart of it is, do we take a risk in going out and going out into the world? I know, I try not to. But anyway.
You're going to have to. That's what I'm
And you know, the other thing we got to admit as we start this discussion on playing it safe in our relationship with Christ is the aspect of personality types. You know, there are people, and you and I are, you know, we have our own personality types, and there are people who really gravitate towards safety. I mean, it's so important. It's not just for themselves either. They're really concerned about the people they love, and so they want them to be safe too. And there's other people that are inherently risk takers, and playing as safe as a boring life, and they die if they couldn't be risk takers. I think we got to admit that too.
Well, not just admit it, but recognize there's a place for both. We need both of those personalities. That's why they were created. We need people who are looking out for everyone, and we need people that are willing to try new things and move forward. It's both of those are important pieces.
So given what we've talked about so far, to kind of narrow the discussion down a little bit more, is the goal of being a Christian to play it safe?
Is that a question for me?
No, it's a question for the dead air.
I was just saying, you got silent. That is the real question. Is our goal to...
Yeah, it's a real question. And here's the reason why I'm asking that. I'm not so certain that any of us here would say, or maybe some people would, and I'm not judging anybody here, but I don't know that many Christians would say it's the goal of the Christian life to play it safe, that we would state that verbally, but sometimes our actions say that the goal is to play it safe, to be safe.
I would agree that. And that's, it's interesting because the different wording you're using is different. Like, to play it safe is different than to be safe.
Yeah, and you know, and I noticed that when I said that, I recognized that too.
And I think we need to talk kind of about all of that aspect of being a Christian. How does Christian and safety go together?
And that, I think that's a good segue. So let's stop here. Let's take a break, because that's where we're going to pick up in segment two. When we come back from this short break, we're going to talk about the relationship between our need for safety and selfishness. We'll be back in a moment.
Are you looking for a place where you are welcomed as you are? A place where your thoughts are welcomed as well as your doubts? A place where you can talk about God without being judged? Then I invite you to join in the life-changing experience of Life Tree Cafe. At Life Tree Cafe, you will spend an hour gathering with others to experience a host-led discussion over topics ranging from serious, fun, and quirky. For more information about Life Tree Cafe and for a location near you, visit their website at www.lifetreecafe.com. If you live in the Colorado Springs community, you are more than welcome to join us at Holy Cross for one of three Life Tree experiences on Monday or Tuesday over the lunch hour from 11:45 to 12:45 or on Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Life Tree Cafe. Come join the conversation.
We would love for you to head over to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast there on iTunes. You may not listen to it on iTunes. You don't have to, but subscribing to it helps get this podcast rated a little higher. And maybe when somebody's searching for a topic, it will come up. So subscribe onto iTunes. And if you could write a review there and rate the podcast, we would really appreciate it. So we did a lot of research in on this topic and looking at different blogs. And Michelle ran across a blog by Craig Greenfield entitled, "No, the Safest Place Isn't the Center of God's Will." And you have a quote from that. Why don't you read that quote?
I will. First, I want to say that, the point is, and the quote that comes from it is the original, that's a Christian cliche. So the title is a Christian cliche. The safest place is the center of God's will. And so he's talking a little bit about where that comes from and why it isn't the safest place. So his quote, Corrie ten Boom, a Dutch Christian who was imprisoned for helping Jews escape the Nazis, coined the famous phrase, "The safest place is in the center of God's will." Sadly, we've twisted a phrase that came out of great suffering into a Christian cliche, misunderstood to mean that we are somehow bulletproof if we are obediently following Jesus. And I found that I do see that in our Christian society a lot, that are, I don't know if that's a proper term, Christian society, but I hear it a lot. The safest place is at the center of God's will. People seem to think means as long as you're doing what God has told you, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, and I take okay being there also meaning I'll have money, I'll have a job, my kids will be obedient.
As a matter of fact, that was kind of one of my first questions. What do we actually mean by being safe? What does safe mean? And you just answered some of that.
Yeah, just a little squirrel moment here. I had the opportunity to hear Corrie ten Boom. When I was in college, she came to Portland was at Memorial Coliseum. And it's so long ago, I don't remember what she said. But when you remember that kind of event, it means a lot to think of this woman who had experienced the concentration camps and the brutality of the Nazis. Just a side note, so we'll talk about safety.
I do think that's important too, to realize that the whole quote we're talking about comes out of that, out of the imprisonment with the Nazis. And her father died, her sister died. People she loved around her weren't the kind of safe we tend to define, which I think is weird when we think about, I'm sorry, let me try to articulate better. I think it's weird what we think, that we think survival is a goal of safety, because we know we're all going to die someday. So why is that even a goal?
Didn't that make sense? Yeah, it does. You know, and one of my thoughts on that is, I've thought about that question before too, is that I think survival is important to us on a different level, in that God did not create us to die. He created us for life. And so death is foreign to us. And inherent in us, whether we are Christian or not, is the desire to live forever. Okay. And so that for me is one of the reasons, the way that I answer that question.
Okay. So as we take that then, and even look at it as a godly thing, even wanting to live a long life here on earth, I don't think is wrong.
No, not at all. In fact, it's promised in the commandment of obedience to your parents.
Do you happen to have that right at the tip of your fingers?
Well, there's honor your father and mother, that it may go well with you, that you may live long on the earth. Of course, the you there is plural. It's not you singular, so it's spoken to the community. So the community lives long. That's kind of interesting. Anyway,
it is an interesting and important. And I would say from being married to someone who is a good Christian man who died young, it's not necessarily a promise that you personally will live a long life on this earth then.
Yeah, I've seen as I wrestled with that commandment, it's still about an issue of safety and a promise that we will have this long life. It has made a great deal of sense from my ministry over the years of burying people in their 20s, babies, small children, you know. The community, the whole Ten Commandments is geared toward the community.
Right, and I think that makes a difference. So, I'm sorry, and I'm going to...
Go for it.
I'm just trying to kind of segue back into... So is trying to stay safe a selfish choice for the Christian? Do we try to be safe because God has told us to be safe, or because it's more self-focused? I just don't like...
I think it's muddy. I think it's very muddy. I think that, you know, I think there can be a time where safety, we think about safety on behalf of others, and it's not selfish. But I don't think it's so clearly defined for me that a line that delineates between when it's selfishness and when it's altruistic. I pretty much, for me as an individual, my need for safety is predominantly self-focused.
And I'd say that's true for a lot of us. I do think that's kind of what it comes down to, is what's our motivation. I have a child that likes to rescue people. That's her absolute love and desire, is to rescue other people. And I am thinking, as we're talking about this, thinking about one of the things I keep trying to teach her, is you can't rescue a drowning person without drowning, you know, unless you're doing it carefully, if you know what you're doing. But if you just jump in to rescue a drowning person, likely you're going to drown too. So I'm looking at what's the life or the line between... Mm-hmm. Keeping myself safe enough to help others and throwing away my safety to help others.
I like what you're talking about. I don't think it's so clear. I don't think this being able to separate between selfishness and not being selfish is real easy. I do know that for me, I want to be able, and I'll talk about this some in the next segment. I'll tell my story how I became a pastor. I want to have security, and that, I'm just kind of mumbling around here for words, what I'm trying to say. The desire to have my life secure is the same thing for me as, you know, kind of being safe. Security is related to my safety. So I want a house that doesn't fall apart. I want enough money to put food on the table and to do some extra stuff with. And I want to have the sense of the guy, the farmer in Jesus' parable, who had the bumper crop and sit back, eat, drink, and be merry, you know, attitude. I guess that kind of relates to me for safety.
I would agree. I mean, I just recently, one of my Facebook posts was about tranquility, how I'm always longing for tranquility, not just for me, but everybody around me. I'd just like things to be going well for everyone for a little while.
For our nation?
For our nation, yeah. It just keeps expanding. And the truth is, that's that's not what we're called to. But we can still find that place in all the other things. So as you're talking, you're talking about physical safety, relational safety, emotional safety. It's not just I'm not jumping off of cliffs. It's also I'm really not sure if I should engage conversation with that person.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because it might not be safe. And some of that's, like I said, emotional safety of they're just a lot of work. But there's also the, okay, he's in a dark alley wearing black clothing. Should I come up and talk to him about Christ today at midnight? You know?
Yeah, and there's some things.
And I think it comes down to what's our motivation? Where is the desire to do things coming from?
It was interesting. A good friend of yours of mine told me a story on Sunday. She drives for Uber, and she drives at night. She has had trouble sleeping and so forth at the time, and so she's an Uber driver at night, and she was coming back from up north. I'm not sure if it was Denver or Boulder, where it was that she was driving that night, and coming back home, and on the way back, she saw this young man riding a bicycle, and when she looked back, he was walking and riding. So she knew he was not riding the bicycle for exercise. And so she actually turned around. She had a truck. They threw the bike in the back and got him in the car, in her truck, and had an amazing conversation with this guy in the middle of the night. You know, and you go, in the middle of a stretch of road that there's no homes, or it's not safe.
In a situation everybody on the planet has told her, you shouldn't do.
Right. And yet it ended up being this amazing conversation. God used it. Refers to it as a God moment.
Right, and probably, you know, it sounds like she felt the Holy Spirit
speaking
to her.
Yeah,
and we've got to be aware of that. In when we're making our decision, are we willing to give up those safe feelings when God tells us to?
Well, so let's take on a little bit earlier. We're going to get to this issue in the blog I wrote. Okay. But this whole idea is safe for the whole family.
Yeah, and that's it. I was just going there too, so that's great.
So we might step on some toes here, and we don't mean to. We really don't mean to step on anybody's toes. We do mean to challenge people, though.
We do need to challenge. I do. And ourselves. I know I step on people's toes. I just naturally do. I have a boundary. No.
I'm evidence of that.
But it does. It changes everything when you're looking at just keeping myself safe and now my family. How am I protecting my family, and what's my job as a parent to protect my children from the world, or let my children interact with a world that's dangerous?
You know,
since you're at a loss for words, one of my biggest people I admire are missionaries who take their families to dangerous places.
Yeah, we've had the gentleman whose family are in somewhere in the Middle East right now, you know.
And I envy those people in a way that I hope that I would be willing to go if called with my whole family and take them into a place. It's one thing to just go myself, but when I'm dragging along my children, that changes the sacrifice we're making.
And yet I've had a few stories from missionary kids when they come back that they can't, they don't want to be here. They want to go back to the mission field. And a lot of them do. Because that life, what we think is not safe is their life and what they know and what they want to go back to.
It's interesting. I had a friend and I were just having a conversation recently, and I was telling her, I was asking for prayer, actually, about balancing between helping some other people in my life and taking care of my own family. You know, when do I stop feeding my own children dinner to take care of someone else's family or someone else? And one thing she reminded me at that moment is, Rochelle, one, your kids are fine. They can make their own suppers. But you're showing them Jesus and what's more important, you know, taking care of them physically and making sure all their needs are met, or showing them how to be Jesus to someone else and sacrifice a little bit.
You talk, they're in this conversation. What came to my mind is there's no rule book on this. And when we ask these questions, it's not like we can go to the Bible even and say, well, here's your answer to when you are sheltering your children too much and when you're exposing them to the dangers of the world. maybe we, well, we'd probably argue with if it did say that.
we would argue, but I think we long for that. Like,
yeah, we do.
Do I send my children to public school? There's a lot of bad stuff going on in public schools, and that probably should be a whole nother podcast one day. I'm very aware of terrible things, sex is just whatever to those kids. It's not no longer even needing to be in a dating relationship. It's just something they do. You want to go to basketball practice? No, let's go to your house and have sex. It's not safe. Drinking, drugs, the language, what's being taught in the schools, it's not all safe. But I'm still making a choice as a parent to send my Christian children to minister in that environment rather than keeping them home to protect them from that environment. And I know lots of people would argue with that, that that is really...
Well, one of the things I've seen for the parents, some parents, and I, this is an area you bring up that causes me a great deal of guilt, because not because I sent my kids to a public school, but how I sent my kids to a public school. And let me explain what I mean. I watch some Christian parents who engage their children in risky sharing of faith from a very small age. They take them places with them. They experience ministering in difficult situations. For example, maybe helping out at the Springs Rescue Mission, or which isn't really unsafe, but it's exposing to a different world. Or they engage them in neighborhood ministry and so forth. But the kids are involved with them in the ministry from a very young age. And so they're seeing how you dialogue with the world and remain true in your Christian...
Remain separate from.
Yeah, remain separate from. But also engaging, still engaging that world that you're in, but doing it from a different perspective of that Christian worldview. And I admire those parents that have done that. I think there's a way that you can do it as well. I don't know if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I'm just pondering because I think that's why there isn't a black and white rule book or a rule in the Bible, because it really depends on the people, the parenting. It depends on the child themselves. Some children are stronger for that, more made for that.
They want it. Some kids will want it. They'll tell you, I want to go.
You know what? And I have a child that brings home... I have one child that brings home stray animals. I have one child that brings home stray people. and that's just the way our world works. And it has changed my safety levels. But I think it's been for the better for our
family. And I'm going to add to your safety level, because you're a single parent.
I am a single parent.
You don't have anybody else to rely on to help you with that situation when your kids are bringing home strays.
Exactly. Yeah, I do have an alarm system, and I do have to change the code fairly frequently because she's getting better about not giving it out, but still.
Wow. we're going to take a break here, Rochelle. Okay. Again, if you need to get into the next section. If you have any questions for us, please email us at prayingwiththeeyes.com. Questions at prayingwiththeeyes.com. And we'd love to get to those questions or thoughts you have. You can also comment on the show notes at the website, Praying with the Eyes website, and we'd love to hear from you. So when we come back from this short break, we're going to go into an area where it hits me between the eyes and it makes me a little bit uncomfortable. We're going to talk about compliance and safety. We'll be back in just a moment.
At Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, we encourage those who hunger to be nourished by God. We believe that true nourishment for our lives is met in our Creator and Redeemer God. At Holy Cross, we proclaim the message that our God desires intimacy with us through His Son, Jesus Christ, and that worship is an experience of this intimacy. To find out more about our worship styles and times, visit our website at www.holycrosscs.org. That again is holycrosscs.org. And if you don't live in the Colorado Springs community, or you are part of a different Christian community, we encourage you to join with God's people as He nourishes His relationship with you.
I'd like to invite you once again to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. As I mentioned last time, you don't have to listen to it through iTunes, but if you subscribe to it there, it keeps the more subscriptions that are a part of this podcast, the higher it goes in the rankings and iTunes, and chance more people will be able to listen to it. And if you would write a review and then also rate it, we would deeply appreciate it. I cut Rochelle off there at the end because we needed to go to a break. So, Rochelle, why don't you finish your thoughts?
And it was pretty simple, and you started to allude to it. It's talking about me being safe as a single parent and things. I just wanted to add that I'm not advocating we necessarily put our kids into danger on purpose. I've seen situations where, unfortunately, families that have tried to help other people, their own children have gotten injured. And we need to keep in mind that there is a true balance. There's a time not to put your kids into danger, I guess. Yeah,
absolutely. Or yourself.
Or yourself. And also the other piece was not keep our kids so naive and so safe that they put themselves in danger because they don't even know what danger looks like. I think those were the two thoughts I...
That was important to say. Yeah, that was really important to say. Yeah, again, it's that fine line of tension between, you know, being smart and yet also understanding that God isn't safe. He's good. He's not safe. And being a Christian is not safe either. So, and we'll dig into that more. What I want to talk about now is this issue where we want to talk about now is more about this issue of compliance and safety. Another blog that we read that Rochelle had pointed out to me, which really spurred us moving in this, well, not this one, but these blogs that spurred us moving into this direction. And she found one that was called Should Christians Play It Safe? And I love this quote. And now he's referencing what he's been talking about beforehand, but it'll be evident what he was talking about by reading the entire quote. He states, now, maybe this is an exaggeration, but I think that a lot of Christians fashion a similar lifestyle for themselves. It's often a life that is based on keeping parents happy, pleasing the boss, coworkers, friends, and neighbors. Often that manifests itself in the form of reluctance to take chances in life for fear of upsetting the delicate status quo. And I really resonate with what he says here, and I'm sure a story from my life at how I became a pastor. And I've shared some bits and pieces of this before, but my road to being a pastor was not because I wanted to take a risk in life. It really was about playing it safe and being compliant with my father. My father is a very dedicated Christian man. He's with Christ right now. He passed away in 2008. I miss him dearly. I was just back in Eugene with my mom and saw his oil paintings, brought a few of those back with me, and I miss him. Okay, so, but I was I am a people pleaser, and I wanted to please my dad. I'm the fourth in the family. My brother really had a hard time in his relationship with my dad, and I determined very young that I was not going to have that same kind of relationship with my father. So I became the compliant child, which made my dad happy in some ways. In other ways, I frustrated him. But so, as I've shared before, he was cutting my hair one day when I was in eighth grade, and he asked me if I had ever thought about becoming a pastor. And so he put that in my brain, and I knew that's what would make him happy. And so I really didn't entertain a whole lot of other things about becoming other things, but I became a pastor. I started in the road of becoming a pastor very much in compliance with my dad's wishes to make him happy. And it did make him happy. He was very proud of me becoming a pastor. And I know God used that, so I'm not saying it. I do believe God has called me to be a pastor, and I've seen evidence of that. And again, for me, was last night. I was with a family that a loved one just passed away, and when I'm in those moments, I realize this is what God has called me to. So it's not about that. It's about me, not about my dad. And feeling that need to be compliant to him. I find that kind of contrary to what Paul talks about in Romans 12:2, where he says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by testing you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect." Now, I wasn't conforming myself to the world, and my dad is a Christian, so I'm not trying to give that impression, but I was conforming to something else than feeling this really strong call at that time in my life to be a pastor. or even kind of a, as I was talking with some pastors yesterday, one pastor had said, no, it was a principal of a school, had said that he came back to visit his home pastor, and the pastor, he's talking about going into ministry, and his pastor said, run away from it as fast as you can. And I think that's really the attitude pastors ought to have when they go into ministry. Give every reason why you should not be a pastor.
And then you'll see if you can still.
I don't know if that makes sense, but anyway, but the issue is compliance.
You brought up another person I know who talks about this in the form of idolatry, in that for him it was his father died when he was young. His dad was a fighter pilot, and he crashed and burned. And so he lived the rest of his life trying to kind of fill that spot. He followed his dad's path. He became a fighter pilot, but he always kept doing things more dangerous, he just kept pushing the edge. And really, it looked like he realized it came to a point where he thought dying was the right thing to do, because that's what would make him a hero. That's what his father did. And he had to realize that he was following a form of idolatry rather than following God's will for him, that wasn't God's calling to be like his dad.
That's another form of the same kind of thing, though.
Oh. Right. It is. And if we look at what it really is, it's a difference between honoring your father and mother when you're being compliant for the wrong reasons. Because we are called to honor them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So and that's not, and honoring our parents is not a thing you do only as long as you're under their roof. It's a lifelong. When I was with my mom, I'm still living out that commandment to honor her. And it was a struggle at times. There were things that, her life has changed. It's an age thing. It's not about. It's just an is thing that happens when somebody gets older, and there were struggles with that. And I'll get there too. It makes me think of writing out now. I'll say to my kids, now, when I say this to you, respond by saying to me. But it's still honoring. It's still a lifelong thing. So yes, it is. You're right. But compliance is a different kind of thing. I don't want to do anything else. People might say, well, he wants to become a photographer. I don't want to become a photographer for a livelihood. See,
yeah,
I
get pastor is your first love and first
love and calling. I do photography as a way of therapy. I am a Christian photographer, and for me, going out and taking pictures is very much connected to my spirituality and my walk with Christ. And I love it, and I love then being able to share that with other people. And I understand why people might say, oh, he doesn't like being a pastor, he wants to be a photographer, because I do it. I don't invest as much time as some people think I do in it. I can't, don't want to. But, it's where God has called me to be. It's not just about compliance with my father. It hurts less, though, to be compliant, doesn't it? It hurts less to be compliant with it. My growing up, it was definitely hurt less to be compliant with dad.
I'm sitting there thinking, because I think I was the youngest too and watched a lot of things, but maybe my brother fits more that role. I'm thinking I was a peacemaker more than compliant. And honestly, I think I'm just what I would describe other people as, I'm a different kind of duck. I'm just too weird. I'd never really kind of fit in, so I can't be compliant because I'm just not good at it. I don't blend in anywhere. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me. And for me, peacemaking and compliance were hand in glove. And it may not have been for you, because I think the last born a lot of times tend to be peacemakers in the family.
They tend to be, but so I do think I was a peacemaker, and I tried to make things work right. But as far as trying to, and I think maybe it's a different family type too. I mean, I went into theater, and not once did either of my parents say they thought that wasn't a great idea. And yet I'm sure they didn't love it. That doesn't sound like what you want your kid to go to college and do. Most parents are fearful that you'll ever earn a living. But
okay, I speak from the parent side on that, because my middle son went into theater. And yes, you're exactly right. You sit there and you worry about the money,
Yeah, and my parents, but as far as interaction with me, they were supportive of what I chose to do. So maybe I'm just fortunate in that, and that's how they were. I also knew I wasn't going to be... It was always a given that we wouldn't ever move back.
So you and I are kind of in a different spot then, because for me, in growing up in my family, it hurt a lot less to be compliant to my parents. And so, and I would always choose the less pain. But I think what we can also say about work.
Right.
It can be hurt a lot less to be compliant than to say, I don't think that's the way we should do this.
Right. And just kind of go with the flow rather than swimming upstream, as they say, right? Or yeah. Changing things yeah. up.
So I'm going to bring up this is really in process right now. I am preaching on what I consider to be the most difficult text in the Bible to preach on this coming Sunday. I've avoided this text, but one of the gifts Pastor Dave gave to me before he left was giving me this text, and I'm trying to honor what he did. And that is this coming Sunday, September 4th, I'm preaching on the text that says that it's on discipleship. And that we cannot be Jesus' disciple if we don't hate our family, if we don't pick up our cross, and if we don't abandon possessions. Those three things. And it's bluntly said, you cannot be my disciple. And the one I wrestle with the most here is the hating family, you know, and of course you temper that with what Paul says about husbands loving their wives and wives submitting to their husbands and so forth. But this one causes me struggle. I how about you? I mean, is this one of those passages you just kind of skip over?
I don't skip over. I often wonder if I should look up the word hate to see what word he really
means. It means
used.
Hate. It is. There's no other way of translating it.
No, I think it's partly what you talked about. It's putting it in context of the whole word one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I think it's just that willingness to not to obey a God above everything else. That's what he's asking us to do. And sometimes that causes conflict around us.
But to be compliant with Jesus is tough here.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that's an easy thing.
And does he literally mean to hate our family? Because we do think, you know, the next one about picking up our cross, we do take that literally, not in the sense of actually finding a cross, but understanding the imagery behind it. And here's where I come out with that, and where I'm going with it right now is that what he asks us to do is to hate that which we embrace the most, and to embrace that which we hate. To hate that which we embrace the most, and to embrace that which we hate the most. So it's the opposite, you know, in those two statements. So our family, we embrace the most. You got to give it up. What we hate the most is suffering and death, and in the way we live our life, we have to embrace it to be a disciple of Christ.
I think you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, I can't argue with that at
all. Oh, please do. Please. I need help. Yeah. I need help. I'm going to stand up there on Sunday. Fortunately, it's Labor Day, and most everybody's going to be gone someplace. So
I will be there. And, I'm just going to give a little plug. You don't know I'm doing this. My kids and I, we traveled this summer a lot. We went to some other churches, all Lutheran churches, but we experienced some other places. And I want to compliment you and Jeffrey and Dave in that my kids said, you know, the preaching was good in the other churches, but I love the preaching in our church.
Well, thank you. Jeffrey, you know, Dave was good at setting a course. I really missed that with him. And he was very, very diligent about being intentional. Jeffrey inspires me in not playing it safe. For me to take this change of using like the table and so the silverware and stuff on Sunday, and to do that was not safe for me. You know, it's taking a risk because I'm not used to doing it, and I appreciate that. Well, but this text is really challenging me, and I'm
reading it again as give up idolatry. Don't cling to anything that isn't. God
so
didn't give
that's
us
selfishness.
Anything on this planet to keep. Right. It's back to that selfishness. Anything that you are clinging to, I liked how you worded that, that isn't, is something that God might take away, or that sin in the world might take away, however you want to look at it.
Don't
but
embrace
if we're
it.
Clinging to Christ, that can't be taken.
And things will be taken away from us. I look at my mom. She's moved into a small two-bedroom apartment, very nice. But I spent my time by myself in the house I grew up in. Big house, you know? And all the stuff that she used to surround herself with, she doesn't anymore, and she's fine with it.
Yeah.
And that's going to be all of us. We're all going to give up something, everything, eventually everything. And what's important is clinging to Christ. So again, Rochelle and I are not giving all the answers here, but I hope we're challenging you and you want to respond to this. And if you do, please email us at questions@prayingwiththeeyes.com or respond in the comments at the show notes at the website. We would love to hear from you. And so when we come back from this break, our last break here, we're going to talk about the blog entitled Safe for the Whole Family. Back in a moment.
Are you looking for a place where you are welcomed as you are? A place where your thoughts are welcomed as well as your doubts? A place where you can talk about God without being judged? Then I invite you to join in the life-changing experience of Life Tree Cafe. At Life Tree Cafe, you will spend an hour gathering with others to experience a host-led discussion over topics ranging from serious, fun, and quirky. For more information about Life Tree Cafe and for a location near you, visit their website at www.lifetreecafe.com. If you live in the Colorado Springs community, you are more than welcome to join us at Holy Cross for one of three Life Tree experiences on Monday or Tuesday over the lunch hour from 11:45 to 12:45 or on Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. Life Tree Cafe. Come join the conversation.
Once again, please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, and if you would there, if you could leave a rating and some comments, that would be appreciated too. This discussion today, it was also a part of a blog that I wrote a long time ago called Safe for the Whole Family? And let's talk about the picture first. The picture is of a bison. As I mentioned, I was out on a trip by myself. I just get these times on my day off when I've got to go drive and take pictures. And it was kind of a risky day. I don't know if it was winter or if it was fall, but there was a storm that was a snowstorm that was following me down, which was, I'm thinking about it. I knew I had to come back through it because I was heading south through the Wet Valley, a beautiful valley here in Colorado between the Sangre de Cristo Mountains and the Wet Mountains. And I ran across these bison that were out in a field, a lot of them. And so I got out of my car and took pictures of it, but I was safe because there were two fences between that bison and me. And I'm not so certain he cared anyway, because he was probably much more interested in grazing on what little grass there was in that area. But so it got me, as I got home and I looked at that picture and developed it and thought about it and wrote the blog, it got me thinking about safety as in the Christian faith. And that there's a, and I believe that we've talked about a little bit about this before, Rochelle, in a podcast. The whole idea, there's a Christian radio station here, and I got a feeling their parent company has the same slogan in other towns as well, that says, safe for the whole family. And that causes some tension for me. On the one hand, we do want to not expose our kids to lyrics and thoughts that are against the Christian faith. And so that's their reason for the slogan. At the same time, it goes back to me to the quote we started with from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe about Aslan and who God is, who Christ is, that Beaver says, Mr. Beaver says, that Aslan isn't safe, but he's good. And maybe it'd be better to say good for the whole family instead of safe. Safe is kind of keep us safe, as to me, as it is a word where we pull ourselves back from the world. And safe is more engaging. I mean, good is more engaging.
It's more engaging. You know, and I know a lot of people that I know, I have a friend who won't even listen to that station simply because of that slogan. It just, irks her, and it's really the wording. It's not their meaning behind the wording that bothers you. It's the word choice, right? That it's right. safe.
Exactly.
I mean,
it's a number word, number one, safe for the whole family.
Yeah, and you're saying, well, what's safe? What do you mean by safe?
Yeah, exactly. Retreating from the world, and I've used this image before. It's my favorite image coming from the movie Pleasantville of the bowling alley, where the town, the mayor of the town, I believe it was, John Goodman's character is what I remember. I haven't seen it for a while, so I may be wrong about that. But saying, hey, at least we're in a bowling alley. And the idea was we were safe. You know, and I think churches do that too much. And so I tied together that blog with the scripture from 1 Corinthians 1:22. For Jews demand miraculous signs and Greeks ask for wisdom, but we preached about a crucified Christ, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. That's from the New English Translation. Let's talk about the stumbling block of the gospel. Yeah, and this is, I think, at the heart of why this issue of safety is. On our minds, because Paul says the gospel is a stumbling block. So why would it be a stumbling block to people who want a sign? Why would the gospel, Jesus Christ crucified, resurrected, why would that be a stumbling block to people who are seeking a sign? I am asking you.
I'm pondering because that's hard to answer. Because what happened is a sign. It's because people want a different sign. They don't like that.
That's
one.
It. That's it. See, you know, you put into words. I was struggling with it too. And the next one, when we talk about why is a stumbling block to people who seek wisdom, that's pretty clear to me, because it seems stupid, you know, to say that God would send His Son. How's God even have a son, you know, and send Him to this earth to embody, to take on our human body to die to rise. That's foolish. I get that. But
right.
A sign
it just
is
seems like a silly thing to have. Can't he do it some other way? Isn't there something better than that? But yeah, but the sign of wanting a sign, I think we want something personalized. I think it's back to selfishness. I want a sign for me. I don't need a sign that went to the whole world. That's too generic.
You know, it goes back to my college days when you said that, because I wanted a sign from God. And that sign, and when I was in college, the charismatic movement was huge. And it affected all of the Lutheran campuses and the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. It affected our campus at Portland and Ann Arbor, where I went to school. And so with that background, you would have people, well, God told me, and they would hear an audible voice, right? And so my sign that I wanted was God to speak to me in an audible voice, that I would actually hear what He was telling me to do, and or just talk to me. That was a sign I wanted.
I'm laughing because I've just been reading. Well, I've been reading through the New Testament, most of which is written by Paul, and I'm struggling with this. I think it's the whole discussion we've just had. He's in so many unsafe places, and yet he gets to have the audible voice of God. Angels appear to him and warn him. So that makes it easier to sit through 2 weeks of a shipwreck, you know, not a shipwreck, but a storm on the seas before
well,
the shipwreck.
It will be a shipwreck, yeah. And it helps him endure the shipwreck, knowing he's not going to die in the open ocean.
Right. So he's got more news than I feel like I get. So I'm always saying, God, that's not fair. I see that he went through a lot more than I had to go through, but he's got a lot more to bolster him too. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you know, I think on that level, you're right. It's a different kind of sign, because the cross is a sign. It's very visible. Yeah, we don't see the actual cross, but, you know, it's a visible sign.
But it's not
sign.
Even the cross. It's the stumbling block. It's the very story of Christ. And if you look through, that's what Paul used, right? He went through and argued from the Old Testament scriptures, from the Torah,
yeah, that's right.
How Christ
that's right.
fulfilled each of those prophecies. He is the sign. And yet that's still not enough for us, because it's somehow, that's what makes it a stumbling block for me to see from the other direction. I don't understand why people trip on what seems so obvious now that I see it. But it's,
so let's try to pull it together with this. The thought we've talked about selfishness, and as a part of our wanting to be safe, and compliance as a part of being safe. So what part does selfishness and a need for compliance play in us not being able to embrace that the gospel is a stumbling block? You see, I think we don't want, I don't want it to be a stumbling block because I want my life to be safe in the world. You know,
I just want, it's funny because I'm trying to answer your question and have my own thoughts at the same time that are different, but the same. I just like being comfortable, and that's the selfishness of it right there. I don't like when God wants me to step outside of this comfortable place to do his work, period.
I agree with that. And one thing that came to my mind as you said that was, I think some people might interpret that, and I might interpret that at times as meaning I've got to do something that I'm not gifted to do. It has nothing to do with that. I think being called out into a world and to not play it safe and embrace the fact that the gospel is a stumbling block actually fits within our gifts. I know God asks us, he doesn't give us gifts and then expects us to do what another person's gifted to do. So in other words, you know, what are we gifted at? And within that area, God calls us out to not be safe.
To not be safe. And I'm even laughing at the God calls us out. I think I know. I don't know if you mean what I'm thinking. But well, I was thinking, yeah, even if I'm not called out, he drops people on my front porch, right? If
that's a good leave, point. Yeah, absolutely.
He brings them to me. Either way, it's not safe.
Why me, God? Why now?
But it's rewarding. It's what he wants. And it's what our calling is to, we're not here for us. That's what it comes down to. When we get frustrated with God for making that gospel a stumbling block, when we get frustrated with God for things not feeling safe and comfortable, it's because we're not here for our pleasure. We're here for his pleasure, for his work to be done, not just so we can play, right? We're not here to play.
But we do play, which is interesting. Yeah, no, and it's what I hear you saying is that we're not here to make it our goal in life to play. That's right. Not the number one thing in life, to play.
As a matter of fact, it goes back to the original article, which talks about you wouldn't go up to a soldier and say, be safe out there. I mean, you kind of do.
We pray about that, don't we? We do on the church.
We pray for safety and we ask them to be safe, but we know they're going into a dangerous place. Well, we're God's soldiers.
Yeah, we're going into a dangerous place.
We can try to be safe, but we're in a dangerous place.
And those times when I have not played it safe are the most exciting times. You know, where I have been stretched beyond my comfort zone are some of the times when I've had the most excitement in my life. So yeah, we'll leave you with that thought. Thank you for joining with us today in this episode of the Praying with the Eyes podcast. What a joy to know that you keep tuning in to us. And if you have questions, please email us at questions@prayingwiththeeyes.com. Again, we'd love to hear from you, or you can leave comments about this podcast at the show notes, and let's keep the conversation going. If you'd like to find out more about Holy Cross Lutheran Church in Colorado Springs, Colorado, we would love for you to go to our website at holycrosscs.org, and you can find out more about different ministries that are going on here, and we have a men's retreat and a women's retreat coming up soon. I'm excited about both of those. I get to actually do the worship service this year for the I'm doing it for the men's retreat. Jeffrey's doing the women's retreat this year. I keep getting that mixed up. But anyway, you can find out more about it. You can register for them. We'd love to have you come and join us. They're going to be up at Lutheran Valley Retreat up in the mountains. And you don't have to be a member of Holy Cross to be a part of that. And if you'd like to be a part and join us for those retreats, please go to our website and you can register and pay for those retreats there. If you live in the Colorado Springs community and don't have a church home, we would love for you to come and visit us. We worship at 8 o'clock, 9:30, and 11 on Sundays, with Bible class at 9:30 for children and adults. And we're starting up now with new school year. We start up with new Bible studies for both for children and adults. Exciting time for us here at Holy Cross. And once again, I would invite you to subscribe to the Praying with the Eyes podcast on iTunes. And if you would, leave us a review and some rate us. It would be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening, and Rochelle and I hope that you will join us on our next episode of the Praying with the Eyes podcast.
Thank you for joining us today on this edition of the Praying with the Eyes podcast. These podcasts are produced by Jason Laird Productions, which you can find online at jasonlairdproductions.com. For thoughts and questions that you might have, please email Doug, that is questions@prayingwiththeeyes.com. Be sure to subscribe to the Praying with the Eyes podcast on iTunes as well as post a review. We invite you to tell a friend about today's podcast by posting a link on your social media accounts. We look forward to being with you in our next episode.